Welcome to Interchain FM, where we dive into the frontier of the blockchain space. We're now in the third generation of blockchain tech, where a burgeoning multi-chain ecosystem is about to explode into what we call the decentralized web. Where Ethereum is to the mainframe computing era of the internet, Cosmos is to the PC era. If you're seeking alpha in the Cosmos ecosystem, look no further. This is the destination for your exponential learning experience. Interchain FM is where you can get the download on all of the high signal projects building bridges to one another and how you can participate in the future of the internet. Happy Merge Day and welcome to the show, Siddharth.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here. Excited to be here.
Can you give us your backstory just so people know where you come from and what it is that you do on the Interchain?
Sure. So I'm Siddharth. I'm one of the co-founders of Comdex. Prior to entering crypto and you know the Interchain, I had a background in traditional finance, working in wealth management and investment banking. Around 2017, 2018 is when I started getting very interested in crypto and Cosmos caught my eye at the time. So, I've been building Comdex ever since 2018. I've been building in Cosmos, focusing now on delivering a suite of DeFi products for the Cosmos ecosystem and Comdex to essentially serve as a DeFi infrastructure layer for Cosmos and the Interchain.
Yeah, thank you. When I first heard about Comdex, it was 2019 at Hack Adam Seoul. And actually, it was Hyung from BeeHarvest who was telling me about it because he was validating for Comdex. And so I hadn't heard about it before that point. And when he told me that it was basically the largest commodities DEX, I was quite surprised. You guys were doing something like over $10 million worth of volume at that time on what, like wheat commodities and other things, right? What was the backstory with that, if we could go back to that time?
For sure. So, for me, coming from traditional finance, I always sort of looked at crypto and thought about how it can be applied into traditional finance and into, supply chain and the broader kind of use cases there. So that's what kind of drew me towards crypto, but always kind of staying rooted on the traditional finance side of things. And at the time, I was connected to a few folks who at the time, were very well placed in the commodities ecosystem. So I kind of through them understood what the shortcomings were for the commodities space, for the commodities industry as a whole. And I also kind of got a perception of how large the industry is. I mean, commodities volumes on an annual basis are $17 trillion. So the idea kind of sprung up there where we should figure out a way to tokenize these commodity assets that exist off chain, bring them on chain, trace their ownership, trace their exchange, and create sort of a more transparent and efficient environment for their exchange. Because when you look at how commodities are being exchanged today off chain, it's a very clunky and slow process. It requires a lot of expenditure on legal verifications, document verifications, relying on banking rails. So the average kind of life cycle of a commodities trade in the real world is upwards of 7 working days. And whereas realistically, it should all be done, within a day on the blockchain, because all the verifications are there. It's there for anyone who's permissioned to access that to see all the information that's needed. So that's kind of the origin of Comdex as a commodities decentralized exchange. The idea was always to create a blockchain that's able to tokenize these commodity assets and then facilitate their exchange and financing on chain as well.
And how did you guys find Cosmos to be the solution at that time? Because the narrative was still very much entrenched in this idea that Ethereum Layer 1 was going to be this monolithic platform for hosting all apps. So you guys were quite early.
Yep. I mean, there's two parts to that. One part is obviously that we were always very bullish on proof of stake chains. And we at the time we studied, the Cosmos stack and at least the tech brains on the team were very confident that this is the way we should go forward in terms of adopting POS. So Cosmos kind of caught our eye very early on, back in 2018 when we were still kind of figuring out the technological aspects of how we would do it. Also kind of thinking about how these assets would be tokenized on chain as well. The way the enterprise trade app that we launched back in 2018, 2019 works is that it tokenizes commodity assets in the real world as NFTs on the chain by creating, an NFT that represents all the documents that represent their ownership in the real world. So these NFTs on chain would, you know, typically be storing a large amount of data and a large amount of, they'd kind of become heavy, you know, data assets on the chain. And to kind of handle that kind of transactions, and, you know, as the platform scales as well, with larger volumes of commodities coming onto the platform, we were expecting that there should be, at the kind of blockchain level, we should have a blockchain that's able to withstand that volume of exchange and that size of exchange as well. So that's kind of the second reason why Cosmos, you know, again, stood out to us, because, and I think that the biggest testament to that is, you know, how Cosmos has grown in the past 2 years, the way the hubs have grown and the way transactions have grown. So it's definitely proving to be that chain, which is, you know, scalable, offering offering the security that users look for, and also kind of delivering the ability to, you know, build out huge scalable applications on top.
So how does the Comdex chain actually, I guess, track real world assets?
How the Comdex chain tracked real world assets in 2019 and how it does it today is slightly different. In 2019, you know, as I explained a minute ago, it's kind of like you have documents that represent, you know, commodity assets. We bring them on chain, tokenize them as NFTs, and store them on chain and track their ownership. How we're doing it today, we have sort of multiple different ways to recognize assets. So we obviously recognize IVC assets and you know, have a capability to recognize the value that they have across the ecosystem. We're also working on, or we have been working on, creating on-chain derivatives, which is basically synthetic assets, assets that derive their value from another underlying asset. So again, you know, we spoke a bit about the commodity synthetics exchange a little earlier on in 2021. And at the time, you know, we kind of started building it out based on the AMM model for exchange. But we kind of, you know, stumbled into challenges with figuring out how liquidity would work in terms of building out sufficient liquidity to maintain the peg of these assets. So we're still in the process of evaluating how we'd proceed with the with that challenge of things. But today, the Comdex chain is able to, you know, take any IVC asset or any asset of value, collateralize it, and create synthetics against that. So that's one way that we're able to recognize commodity assets on the Comdex chain today. The other still remains the way we did it on the enterprise platform, where, you know, we can create NFTs of any asset that's off-chain by creating representations of those on-chain. So those are kind of two primary ways that that commodity assets will be brought on-chain on the Comdex chain going forward.
When you said that these off-chain assets get represented as NFTs with huge amounts of metadata, is that some sort of standard in Cosmos? Is like, how did you implement that in the Cosmos SDK paradigm?
Regarding the technicalities of it, I'm not the right person to probably get into the details of that. But at a high level, the challenge kind of arises from the fact that across different commodities, the nature of the commodities are also different. So if you were to consider a cargo shipment that contains wheat versus a cargo shipment that contains copper, the set of documentation required to signify the ownership of the wheat cargo is very different from what would be required for the copper cargo. In some cases, you know, there's a lot of certification, there's a lot of kind of licensing documents that get involved, which kind of stacks up large amounts of data on the chain when one asset has to be, you know, kind of represented through all these different documents that are on chain. So it's not a standard process across commodities, but there is a lot of scope for variation how a commodity gets represented on chain. So in order to kind of accommodate all these different commodities, we'd have to create at a base level something that's, you know, very broad, which is able to kind of accommodate a larger set of kind of permutations and combinations of documents, if you will.
Are you guys one of the only projects that are addressing the commodities market? I only know of you guys in Cosmos, but I'm not sure if that's true of Ethereum, if they have other projects that does this.
I'm aware of a few projects that have sort of built out similar solutions to the one we built when it comes to enterprise trade, where they're, you know, facilitating exchange of commodity assets, facilitating kind of financing on of these assets as well. But as it is with our enterprise product as well, you know, most of these products operate on a private blockchain because the nature of these commodity transactions are such that all the parties involved in these transactions are kind of protective of the way the data of these transactions are handled. So it needs to be auditable, but only auditable by permissioned entities and permissioned parties. So to create that kind of transaction environment, you know, usually most solutions along these lines rely on private blockchains. So I do know of a few solutions out there that are live that are doing this. But how we kind of, you know, thought about it differently was that we always envisioned in the long run that the lines between DeFi and CeFi would sort of start to get blurred as, you know, DeFi gets more and more adopted by people around the world. So we want to kind of create at an infrastructure level, be prepared sort of for that paradigm where people are able to sort of seamlessly move between DeFi and CeFi, move liquidity between these two realms. So yes, on the enterprise trade side of things, we had an application that was, you know, fully CeFi focused, which had KYC and all these different kind of onboarding procedures for the users that use that. But we always envisioned that in the long run, there would be capability for investors who hold assets in the DeFi realm of things to kind of channel their liquidity into these centralized finance assets so that us as DeFi users as well have access to a broader range of assets to generate yield from.
Got it. Right. So this is actually similar to this problem. I was thinking of the luxury fashion market and how, let's say, someone like Chanel could use the blockchain and it would have to be implemented through something private because somebody outside of the system couldn't really verify themselves. But if you are the originator of whatever is on the supply chain, then you're the only one that could use it to authenticate, basically. And it has to be this sort of trusted paradigm.
Yep, that makes sense. That's appropriate.
Yeah. So let's talk about the upcoming products that you guys are building. So you did allude to the fact that people can collateralize certain assets and then basically mint a debt instrument, which is composite, right? Your stablecoin, CMST. So tell me more about that and about the airdrop, because I think you guys are doing an airdrop and that's what some people are listening here for.
For sure. So yeah, so, you know, the idea with Composite was obviously to have a Cosmos native stablecoin. Back in, I think, mid-2021 is when we decided that there needs to be a kind of a stablecoin at the heart of all the solutions that we plan to build, especially when it comes to having this whole bridging of DeFi and CeFi. There needs to be that stable asset that represents stable purchasing power for users to kind of interact and move liquidity seamlessly. So, but you know, USD coming into the picture later in the year kind of slowed us down because at the time, USD sort of became the de facto, you can say, the de facto stablecoin for Cosmos. And it became a challenge for us to compete because, you know, obviously USD was offering 20% yield on Anchor and it was capital efficient and whatnot. But for us as a team, we always sort of saw stablecoins as collateralized where deep down, at least for me personally, I was never a big fan of the algorithmic model and kind of spoke about this several times as well. So, you know, as soon as the whole USD situation unfolded, we saw what kind of impact it had on Cosmos as a whole. A lot of people who were LPing across Osmosis, you know, got wrecked pretty bad. So we realized that now is the perfect time for a stablecoin to come and fill this vacuum. And all the kind of research work we had done until that point pointed us in the direction of creating over-collateralized stablecoins, similar to what MakerDAO's DAI looks like in the Ethereum ecosystem. So that's how we kind of arrived at the model for Composite. It's essentially tapping into IBC assets, you know, liquid IBC assets, giving them liquidity by collateralizing them and minting the stablecoin. And again, you know, most assets that we accept as collateral would be over-collateralized. So mostly 200% or above for most assets. And for stable assets like other stablecoins, you know, it's likely to be lower under 150%, but still higher than 100% to ensure that overall the debt on the protocol always remains solvent. In terms of the airdrop, you know, so as is the case with DAI on MakerDAO, there's the MKR token, which is the governance token for that protocol. We'll have the Harbor token, which is also the governance token for the composite stablecoin. So the Harbor token plays a very key role in how the protocol functions as a whole, because a large part of how the stablecoin maintains its peg in the long run is a function of monetary policies on the protocol. So monetary policies are typically what's the base interest rate at which someone can get the stablecoin, what is the interest rate someone can earn from depositing stablecoin on the protocol, and kind of various fee parameters that, you know, come into play when you are minting the stablecoin. So in order to modify these parameters, governance plays a key role, and good governance would lead to value accrual to that token itself, because all the revenue that the protocol earns directly accrues to the Harbor token. So what we've kind of gone further and done is, you know, adopted the VE33 model that Andre Cronje introduced, you know, I think last year, where it's essentially you have the opportunity to lock up your Harbor tokens into voting escrows. And the duration of your lockup, whether it's 1 year, 2 years, or 4 years, is directly proportional to how much voting power you have on the protocol. So someone locking up an amount of Harbor token for 1 year would have less voting power than someone locking up the same amount of Harbor token for a longer period of time. And, encourage everyone to check out the VE33 model that Andre Cronje has developed. I think it's a very well thought out model and kind of very exhaustive in how it approaches these problems. So our approach also is to focus on governance in that sense, encourage governance. So we will be doing, I think last week we announced that there will be an airdrop to CMDX, Atom and Osmo holders and stakers. Today, earlier on, we had a Twitter space where I also announced that CMDX LPs for pool 600 and 601 on Osmosis would be getting the airdrop. I am excited to talk about a bit more about the airdrop on this channel right now, but I think I want to save that for the end so that there's still more information that people pick up along the way. And then we'll definitely come back to the airdrop and I'd love to announce, let's say, the next three communities that we'd be dropping the token to.
So what are the assets currently whitelisted that can be collateralized in order to borrow CMST?
So as of now, CMST is on testnet, Harbor Protocol is on testnet. But when it does go live on mainnet, we'll launch with Atom and Osmo as collateral assets that will be whitelisted. We'll also have other stablecoins that people will be able to use to collateralize and mint CMST. So can be Axelar USDC, Axelar DAI, Gravity USDC, Gravity DAI, and so on. Also, other stablecoins that are being built in the ecosystem will also be used as collateral there. For onboarding more and more Cosmos assets and even multi-chain assets as collateral, the process would typically just be a matter of, getting a governance proposal out there, figuring out exactly the right kind of risk metrics for these assets, and then get them onboarded. So the plan is to gradually phase more and more IBC assets in, starting with the highly liquid assets first, and then through kind of governance, onboard more and more assets till we have a large set of IBC assets that are used for collateral.
So I want to ask a more theoretical question, which is, why is it that you guys went with a 2x over collateralized model? Why do you think that over collateralization versus high capital efficiency in that ratio is optimal in your eyes? Because I do have a theory about how stablecoins may progress in the future, right? And obviously, now that UST is out of the picture, there's many projects coming in with their various experiments, none of them which are algo stables. So why did you guys go with this model?
So a large part of how we arrived at the over-collateralization factor, we took inspiration from, again, the work done by the folks at Delphi for Mars protocol, because I think they have built a very substantial risk assessment model on their protocol. So through that, we kind of got an understanding of how risk for any collateral asset should be assessed. And the key parameter to assessing the risk for any collateral asset, I think, becomes liquidity. Because for any asset, when it's when it's got sufficiently deep liquidity in the markets out there, it's likely to have low slippage, which means volatility for such assets is also lower. At the same time, if these assets are not don't have sufficient depth of liquidity in markets, then they're likely to have higher slippage and more volatility. So looking at any kind of asset that gets onboarded as a collateral, we first kind of study what the liquidity of this asset looks like across all markets. Highly liquid assets get lower collateralization ratios and less liquid assets get higher collateralization ratios. So in terms of, looking at IBC assets, we saw a large part of them fall into the over 200% category. There are a few. I think Atom is under 200%. I think Osmo would also be under 200%, but a large majority of them would be above 200% in collateralization. And that, again, just becomes a function of liquidity in the markets out there, because at any point, we also have debt ceilings built into the protocol, which is basically a limit on the amount of CMST that can be minted against a single collateral type. And this is basically, again, just to create a limit on how much Atom gets deposited as collateral on the protocol. Because, if you kind of concentrate your exposure to a single collateral type, then volatility in that market would severely impact the protocol. And what the debt ceiling also does is that if, let's say, there is, large volatility or a large dip in any of the markets for the collaterals, when the protocol starts liquidating that collateral, we don't want the protocol's liquidations to have a further cascading effect on the price of that asset in the markets. So by creating these debt ceilings, we're also limiting the impact of protocol liquidations on the market conditions of those assets. So it's kind of these two factors that play a large role. One is the factor of over-collateralization, and the second is the debt ceiling for any collateral asset type.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this podcast to tell you about Interchain FM Steak. Interchain FM is not only a podcast, but also a steakhouse. IFM Steak is a premium, sushi-grade steakhouse running on Osmosis, Umi, and Comdex. If you get your alpha from this podcast, show us some love by delegating to Interchain FM Steak. I wonder if there's any room for these protocols to kind of dynamically shift the collateralization ratio. I guess that's what governance is for, but you know, I wonder if there's any way for future protocols to basically understand what's going on in the macro market to assess whether or not price stability is either very volatile or actually rather flatline and having sideways action, right? Because most of the time in a bull market, things are going up only, but then there's only a short window of time when it's like very volatile and things fall precipitously. And then once you're in this long, you know, 6 to 18 month bear market, it's basically like a sideways bleed, and therefore it's not actually that volatile. And so you could change the collateralization ratio to something much lower if prices aren't changing by like 2x, for example. But anyway, I guess
definitely
Yeah,
I mean, I've thought about this too, because you know, governance is definitely there for being able to adjust these parameters, but it's probably not as smooth as you know, having something algorithmic that's figuring out on a real-time basis what the condition of the protocol is and adjusting it on the go. At present, I believe the answer lies somewhere in between, where there has to be probably an aspect of number crunching to figure out what the exact collateralization ratio for an asset should be, and also a factor of probably having community governance to accept that new collateralization ratio. So for us, we're definitely internally exploring sort of on an ongoing basis, looking at how we can always improve our risk assessment model, try and make it more dynamic. But I do believe we're a bit of a way away from actually achieving that at an ecosystem level, not just as at Comdex.
Right. Yeah. At an industry level even, right? Because I was talking to Ethan Fry a couple of podcasts ago, and he was talking about basically machine learning on chain. And, you know, once we have AI basically running through all of these blockchains, that's kind of when we're going to be able to have this macro world aware chain state, basically. But, you know, at that point, everything that's going to be transacting on chain is going to be an AI anyway. And in order to win in that game, you're going to have to build your own AI or a bot or something, basically. So fun times. So, okay, all we've been talking about so far has basically been Komodo, right? Your lending and borrowing app. And Harbor is your yield vaults, basically. That's like Yearn, right?
I'd say it's more like Aave or more like Silo Finance, where there's lending pools created for different assets and pairs of assets. So, you know, people can deposit assets for lending or borrow against their deposited assets as collateral at a very high level.
And you guys also have something called CSwap, and that's your on-chain DEX?
Yeah, so that's the hybrid order book style AMM DEX. So essentially, you know, allowing users to create liquidity pools of pairs of assets, trading in those liquidity pools, but also giving them the option of placing limit orders. So the role that CSwap plays also is, you know, whenever liquidations take place on Harbor Protocol or on Komodo for any collateral asset type, there's an auction mechanism that comes into play. So anyone who can participate in this auction is able to acquire the collateral asset at a discount from whatever it trades at in the market. So when you acquire this collateral at a discount from, let's say, Harbor Protocol, you'd want to realize your arbitrage gains by immediately selling that collateral asset somewhere else at the market price. So, you know, CSwap DEX will help achieve that at a slightly faster rate because it's all on the Comdex chain. So someone who participates on auctions in Harbor or Komodo, you know, would be getting these assets at a discount and kind of quickly able to liquidate them on the DEX as well to realize arbitrage gains.
Okay. It's interesting that I'm seeing DEXs move towards this hybrid AMM / order book model. I wonder why that is. I understand that now with the technology that's available, as in the infrastructure that's available, order books are becoming more tenable. Whereas before, because DEXs were launched on Ethereum, which had scalability problems, you had to compromise by creating an AMM basically. Is this your thinking in terms of why this model is the ideal model, especially in Cosmos?
I mean, there's plenty of reasons for it, I think. One of the reasons also I believe will play a role, if not now, in the future, is that AMMs largely depend on liquidity. So, you know, for efficient exchange between two assets, deep liquidity in a liquidity pool is kind of paramount. In the absence of that kind of liquidity, you can have AMM pools, but then you're not able to exchange efficiently. And this is something we were talking about earlier on today as well on our Twitter space. You know, if you think of any derivative asset, whether it's stablecoins or liquid staking protocols as well, the key function to kind of being able to adopt staking derivatives across DeFi would be to build sufficient liquidity for them across DEXs. Building that liquidity is sort of a challenge today because, you know, as it is, it's you have to kind of create a liquidity pool with the native asset and the staked asset. In the absence of sufficient liquidity, the peg between these two assets can become kind of shaky. And in such situations, the adoption of that staked asset as a collateral across DeFi becomes a bit of a challenge. So again, you know, the common theme in all these challenges is liquidity. And order books kind of help you move past that challenge. Even in low liquidity environments, you're able to kind of facilitate exchange through in a relatively more efficient manner. So I do think that's got a large part to play in why more and more protocols are thinking the order book route. And same goes for us as well with the synthetic assets protocol, you know, having synthetic gold, silver, crude oil, palm oil on chain. Maintaining the peg in the long run of these assets to their real world counterparts was becoming a challenge in the AMM model because the liquidity was getting fragmented across so many different pools of different assets. So, that's why we ourselves are now at the drawing board again, kind of ideating around the order booking implementation for that so that we can actually have efficient pricing of all these derivative assets.
Right. So with basically creating synthetic assets out of securities, how do you guys kind of reason about regulations around that? Because a few months ago, regulators were talking about Mirror, right? Because they're kind of the trailblazers of that idea. And they obviously wanted to shut it down alongside everything else that was affiliated with Doquan. How do you circumvent or work with regulations?
So I think regulations will end up being a challenge for anyone who tries to create like derivatives of equity assets, especially US-based equities. Our vision in that sense is to steer clear of equities at all points because it was never kind of a part of our plan. We were always focused on commodities. And the reason we also thought commodities was that, you know, when you look at the macro picture of how things have evolved in a macroeconomic standpoint in the past year, we always spoke about how, you know, there's a lot of quantitative easing happening across the board, a lot of money printing, you know, Fed money printer going brr. So we realized that inflation's around the corner and you know, what we've seen in the past few quarters with 8%+ inflation in US economies and European economies, it's all a function of all this money printing. So now as investors, we're always seeking asset classes that are inflation resistant and creating sustainable yields. So anyone who looks at commodity assets in a in a long-term horizon, you can see that most of them are generally inflation resistant and generating sustainable yields as well. Largely because commodities are assets of inherent value and they're tangible assets. So, you know, no matter what the macro situation looks like around the world, the utility for certain commodities will always be there. And that's kind of what drives a lot of the fundamental value that commodities derive. So we wanted to kind of create an opportunity for users to be able to take exposure to such commodity prices and do that all on chain. In terms of, you know, the regulatory side of things, I know there's a few projects out there that do gold on chain. So there are ways to, you know, achieve certain commodities on chain already today. But for the large part, we never thought of individual commodities or our long-term plan was not to, you know, limit ourselves to an individual commodity or individual sets of commodities, but probably also evolve into baskets of commodities and hybrid baskets of, you know, commodities and crypto assets as well. So someone could be investing, let's say, in a derivative that is, you know, 50% forex, 50% commodities, or maybe, you know, 30% forex, 30% commodities, 30% crypto. So it's kind of spreading out your exposure across asset classes, even into off-chain assets, but still doing that all on-chain.
With commodities, I think if you're trending towards what's available in CeFi, then you're going to have ETFs of commodities, right? But what would be the model that you're following there? Are you going to want to create a basket of assets that largely mirror the same baskets of assets in ETFs, like present in CeFi ETFs? And, you know, and if so, is there going to be arbitrage opportunity between those and the real ones? And then do you anticipate traders to actually come in and arb those? You know, are they going to have some reach parity with the traditional finance equivalents, or are they just going to be completely novel baskets of assets? What's the thinking around that?
Frankly, I'd say we haven't gotten that far in our thought process yet because we're still figuring out the pricing part of the assets. So until we kind of overcome the pricing, we won't be able to address how we kind of arrive at these baskets of assets. There are two sort of two thought processes that we've gone into but not really explored at depth. One could be to obviously pick up existing ETFs and try to replicate those on chain. The second would be to have some sort of community governed model where community kind of votes on the composition of a basket of these commodities or forex or whatever they are, and then as and when that particular composition is voted on by the community, then we're able to create on-chain derivatives for those. So again, not really gotten down the depths of either of these paths because we're still kind of at an N minus one step of figuring out the pricing. But I think as soon as we overcome pricing, we want to launch with at least a core set of commodities, let them kind of pick up some traction and liquidity, and then diversify eventually into baskets or indices of commodities as well, rather than just individual commodities.
In the CeFi world, do you know how they arrive at creating certain baskets? Or is it the banks that decide that?
As far as I'm aware, there's multiple models to that. A large part of it is also done by asset management firms, which have fund managers and committees who kind of manage funds. And they typically have their own set of models and metrics that they use to assess different markets and arrive at those models. Wouldn't claim to know exactly how it's done, to be honest.
Right. I mean, when one looks at ETFs, you see like JP Morgan Chase or Goldman Sachs creating those baskets. And it's basically the DAO of Goldman Sachs rather than an on-chain DAO. Okay. All right. So yeah, out of this entire suite of products, am I understanding correctly that the Comdex team builds these? Like it's all you guys?
Yeah. Yeah. So as of now, Harbor Protocol, Komodo, and CSwap is built by the Comdex team. The synthetics app, which is CAsset, will also be built by the team. The long-term plan is that these apps sort of serve as the fundamental sort of foundations of DeFi for Cosmos. So, Harbor Protocol becomes a stablecoin issuance hub. The CSwap is a DEX where, users can create liquidity pools, exchange, and perform liquidations or realize gains from liquidations there. And then Komodo becomes the decentralized money markets for the interchain. But kind of as we go forward, the plan would be to let users kind of devise strategies themselves to utilize these products, in tandem, and then probably build solutions on top of those as well. At a chain level, all these applications, utilize certain modules on the chain. So all those modules are also currently open source. So, anyone who wants to build utilizing those individual modules is also able to do that today using the Comdex chain. So, for collateralizing, for auctions, for liquidations, for tokenizing assets, for, even creating liquidity pools. I think that there's plenty more that I'm missing out on right now. But we've kind of, at a chain level, built it out in a modular structure where each module performs an individual transaction type in the realm of finance or decentralized finance. And anyone who wants to build is able to just kind of plug and play these modules, replicate those transaction structures, and then create any kind of dApp which deals with DeFi. With the apps that we built, the idea is for them to serve as a foundation layer. But we already have 12.5% of the CMDX token allocation allocated towards incentivizing builders who want to build using the Comdex chain. So that kind of already exists. We have spoken to a couple of teams that have proposed a few solutions to us. Nothing yet finalized on that front, but as things get finalized, the community will definitely hear about that through proposals on chain.
And before we talk about the airdrop, let's address there's an elephant in the room. We got to address it. Okay, Osmosis Prop 317. What happened there? This user called Rama accused Comdex Foundation of wash trading. And I believe your response was that it's not wash trading. You guys are doing market making, right? Can you just give the backstory about that or your side of the story?
Yeah. Last year when we had the DevNet live and we were kind of closing in on mainnet for the DevNet app as well, we'd begun conversations with a few exchanges to think about listing the token. and also get involved in market making on the app itself. So we had a few conversations across a few market makers, and we were involved with one particular market maker who was helping us out with CMDX and, you know, was supposed to help us out with future releases as well, like CMST and Harper. So at that point, we kind of only were trading on Osmosis. So we had handed over a large part of the token and liquidity management in their hands. And as soon as it was pointed out by the community, we immediately sort of took notice, halted that, ended the transaction and the contract with them. And since then, you know, we've kind of now halted all of that and then figuring out the right way to proceed in terms of managing CMDX liquidity.
Right. As I understand it, that's how most major market makers work, which is you get them bootstrapped with the liquidity that they need up to a certain amount, and then they do whatever it is that they do. So yeah, that could happen. So let's talk about the details of the airdrop, and then we want to go towards housekeeping, like announcements and stuff.
So yeah, I think now we can talk about the airdrop as well. So yeah, just to confirm, Atom, Osmo, and CMDX will be getting part of the Harbor airdrop.
And just to clarify, is it a holder or a staker?
Both. The exact mechanics of how that will be calculated will be published in a blog, along with you know, the details of how that's arrived at. We will be also focusing on folks who have participated in governance in the past, because as I mentioned earlier, you know, governance will play a key role in how Harbor protocol is run. In that sense, we want to focus on folks who have been actively participating in governance on all protocols. So there will be a, you know, an allocation to holders, stakers, as well as those who participated in governance, to LPs of pool 600 and 601 on Osmosis as well. And I think I can announce now that the next three communities will be Akash, Umi, and Injective. There's plenty more communities that we'll be airdropping to. So this list is not, you know, exhaustive. There's more coming. But as of now, I can confirm that in addition to Comdex, Osmo, and Atom, Umi, Akash, and Injective will also be receiving the airdrop. And this is the first time it's ever been announced. So anyone who's got this now has got alpha.
Super Era is asking if the snapshot taken for Harbor will or will not be taken after Cosmoverse.
I can neither confirm, neither deny that the snapshot has been taken as of now. I mean, it will kind of defeat the purpose as well if I spoke about it. So as soon as, you know, all these details are finalized, they'll be published in a blog or a tweet. So just stay tuned. That's all I can say.
So once people who've received the airdrop get it, what are they able to do with it? So as I understand, you could at minimum deposit it into a yield-bearing strategy on Harbor and either collateralize it or no.
No. So the Harbor token will never be a collateral on the
Harbor protocol. CMST.
Oh, so we won't be airdropping CMST. We'll be airdropping the Harbor token to holders.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I misunderstood that. I thought you were airdropping CMST. Okay.
No, we'll be airdropping
That's Harbor. My mistake. Yeah. Okay. Harbor.
No worries. Yeah.
Harbor tokens. Okay. Then all you'd have to do is stake it and vote on governance.
That's right. Because all these assets that we want to onboard eventually will be onboarded through governance. So, you know, if UMI holders want to see UMI be collateral, then we encourage UMI holders who receive the airdrop to use the airdrop to participate in governance proposals that work towards onboarding UMI as a collateral, and so on for all the communities, you know, Injective, Osmo, Atom as well.
Rajiv Sharma asks, what are the minimum requirements for Atom, Osmo, and Comdex stakers or holders?
Can't address any specifics of airdrop right now. I can only talk about which communities will be getting it. But what I can say is, I think over the course of next couple of weeks, we'll have announced all of the communities that will be getting the airdrop. And I think as soon as that's done, the details of snapshot and eligibility will also be published.
Okay. All right. Any last comments about that? Or do we want to move on to housekeeping?
Nothing more along those lines, I guess. Just want to encourage everyone to test out the applications that we have live. Harbor, CSwap, and Komodo are all on testnet right now. Because, you know, as users test it out, it helps us as a team kind of collect information from users about what their feedback is about these applications and address anything that we can before they go to mainnet. We'll also have a bug bounty that will be starting very soon. So again, encouraging everyone in the community to participate in the bug bounty as well, because that's a chance for you guys to, you know, get rewarded for the work you do in terms of identifying any shortcomings in the protocols. And it helps us as a team seal any holes that, that we can identify, because it'll be very important for these protocols to be fully tested before they go on mainnet. So yeah, highly encourage everyone to participate in the bug bounty and in the testnets as well.
As I understand it, you guys are planning a hackathon, right? In India, in Bangalore.
Yeah. So yeah, just to speak a bit about that as well. You know, recently I attended a conference here in India, which was called the Web3 conference, focused on developers. There was a decent turnout of developers there, but you know, when I was looking around talking to people, I felt like Cosmos was almost nameless. You know, a lot of people didn't know much about Cosmos. In terms of representation of Cosmos, I think it was Comdex team, Asset Mantle team, a couple of folks from Tendermint, and a couple of folks from Kitopia, and that's it. There was no other representation from Cosmos. But anytime I attend any kind of, you know, crypto or Web3 focused event in India, I see massive representation of other layer ones like Solana and Polygon. So with whatever's happening in the Cosmos ecosystem over the past year, the kind of growth it has achieved, people hearing more and more about Cosmos now, you know, recently DYDX announced they're going Cosmos, Delphi is announcing they're going Cosmos as well. So there's definitely traction being picked up in terms of attention that Cosmos, you know, kind of long deserved. So we want to take that forward, especially in the Indian developer community, because, you know, I used to be based out of Bangalore for the longest time, and I've kind of interacted with so many different developers. So I know there's a very thriving, you know, Web3 developer ecosystem in Bangalore right now. And I think it's probably the right time also to start, for someone to start spreading the gospel of what Cosmos is and what IBC is capable of doing, you know. So yeah, we want to start probably early 2023 or late 2022. We'll have like a hackathon in Bangalore focused on, you know, young developers, some out of uni, some working, and try to introduce them into, you know, into Cosmos. And hopefully if we're able to do that well enough, we want to make it an annual thing where once a year, or maybe more than once a year, we're able to host hackathons like this in Bangalore and across other cities in India as well. Because yeah, I think India has very good developer talent right now, some of the highest numbers of developers as well, and very good quality talent. So would be amazing to, you know, make that happen, especially if you look at certain, you know, I was just thinking about this the other day as well, where someone like a project like Agoric would especially benefit from, you know, this kind of event, because the largest community of Java developers is in Bangalore, I think, in the world. So it'd be great for someone like Agoric to tap into that. For us as well, you know, as we want to kind of expand the set of DeFi products that are being built out on the Comdex chain, we'd love to tap into, you know, some of the young developers who are getting more and more familiar with DeFi and kind of crypto ecosystem. So yeah, the timing feels right. And that's why we started off by, you know, planning this out. So there'll definitely be more details coming out about this in the coming weeks. And, you know, we'll start opening up registrations also in a month or so, so that at least early registrations can begin, and we'll have more details to share about that as well.
So will it be an in-person one or an online one?
We might do it kind of like a hybrid approach where, you know, have the hackathon itself probably happen online, but have an in-person event where, you know, developers come and get to sort of present the work they've done and also interact with other developers and have sort of various networking events going on there as well. Because I feel Cosmos, you know, not a lot of folks are familiar with Cosmos in India today. Not a lot of folks are familiar with Golang. So it might take a little longer for them to actually arrive at, you know, working products with what they start with. So, which is why the hackathon part of it might be a little longer, but the event itself would be like a 3-4 day event where people get to attend in person, you know, meet other folks and network.
Any last things you want to say before we hop off?
Yeah, just to reiterate, you know, would appreciate if people could participate in the testnet, test out the applications and share feedback with us. And there'll definitely be a bug bounty as well. So anyone who participates in helping us find bugs will definitely be rewarded for it as well. So do stay tuned to, you know, the Comdex channels to find more information about this.
And how big is your bug bounty?
We haven't yet fully finalized the details of that. It should be done. I think the details should be announced over the weekend.
Thanks for tuning in to Interchain FM. As always, I will read through the pages of white papers and condense only the alpha for you in a 1-hour long digest. Be sure to subscribe to Chango and Chain's YouTube channel to be up to date about the latest technology and never miss a live streamed episode.